everybody to the Saturday Morning Squadron. I know we've been taking a long break, but we are back. I am your host, Ramses, and unfortunately, Rob. Rob is out at the moment, unfortunately, because, just work has been working him like a dog. And he said, like, hey, go on without me. So these next couple episodes will be special guest host centric episodes. As such, I brought in our old friend here, Jared the Greek, a.k.a. Jay.
Hey, everyone. Glad to be back on the show. This is a really fun show, and it's always a joy to kind of be here and talk about, all sorts of entertainment things that we love.
Yeah, and we got to talk about one thing that we really love, especially something that I got into kind of recently, thanks to you and everybody else. This episode, we're going to focus a lot, and I mean a lot, on Dungeons & Dragons, because usually what we do with this show is, like, we usually have, like, a news topic and stuff like that, but we're going to integrate the news stuff with our actual topics. I feel like having some sort of like telling our beginnings of what we like about this particular topic will give people more of a frame of reference about what's going on. And the topic of this episode is Dungeons and Dragons. You know, it's a franchise that's been going on for like what, 50 years now?
Since the 70s, yeah.
Oh my god, since the 70s. Yeah, so it's like it's something, you know. It's something that you have a little more history than I do. Like, I know it through, like, in passing, thanks to a lot of, like, the accelerating media. But we can discuss that when the time comes. But as always, we're going to discuss how our couple of days have been since our last recording. Well, it's been 7 weeks since our last recording, judging from, like, from what... So, like, we'll try to narrow it down for, like, the last couple of weeks, what we've been up to, if we bought anything, if we watched anything, if we played anything. And then we'll just dive into the topic itself. You know, it's kind of the inverse of our other episodes, where it's like it's so heavy on news that like we're going to be talking about the news first. But it's like it's January, and like the only big news is this. But we can like mix it in with the actual topic itself. So first things first, let's talk about like how what we've been up to since the last couple of weeks. So, Jay, what you've been up to these last couple of weeks? Would you bought anything? You did anything or played anything?
A lot's been going on of trying to finish up some Gunpla kits that just need a little bit of paint and final touches, which has prevented me from actually reviewing certain kits because they're just not completed yet. I mean, I could do it without the extra markings, but then people can look and go, like, that kit looks really bare. I'm like, I know, right? So that's been kind of an issue. Although on the fun side, just thinking about giant robots, I did get a bunch of minis for Battletech over Christmas. So I got to paint those up. I actually saw someone's designs for the Draconis Combine, and I saw the type of red they used. I'm like, that's the red I want, with some gold highlights, because I'm going a little bit, I'm taking the Asian theming to that next level. I need my red and gold. But it's definitely that category where seeing other people's art allows me to kind of have an idea of what I want things to look like, which is always cool. ALA happened. I ran two panels, both with you, actually. Mm-hmm. And I was also the MC of the dance, which was a lot of fun. One of the, if not the most popular event at the con, we literally got room capacity and had to wait for people to get in, which was pretty cool. And overall, the convention was fun. I went in the rule of I'm not bringing my wallet because I am not buying any more model kits. And so my significant other bought me two model kits because that's the kind of person she is. And that's what makes her awesome. But at the other hand, my to build queue is overflowing because I have kits that need to be finalized, and I refuse to build anything else until the kits right now that require this last little TLC are done. Otherwise, I would totally be working on my Goof custom right now because I have the Easy 8 and they need to verse each other. It's just how it works. Okay, in addition to that, I've been doing a lot of videos for my channel. My Capricorn video for the Mythology of the Capricorn went up. A few other mythology videos and stuff have gone up. The Aquarius video is like partway completed. And I did my first tabletop video for the first time in a long time on the Open Gaming License, what it is and why you should care. And that just got posted on the day that we're recording this, which will probably be a week ago, I think, when this finally gets posted. But you can find that on my channel. It's a really good video. It's a 9-minute, easy-to-digest version explaining to you what all this is and why people are upset.
Yeah, and I'll link that in the description also. But we're also going to touch upon it just lightly as well, because like I know you have a huge thing on it, but it's like we're going to go more into like more in depth with it. But if you want like a primer as to what's going on, feel free to check out his video first. I highly recommend it. I recommend anybody that's listening to check out Dapper Bard Tavern. And if you're interested in finding more information about Jay's videos that he's been posting as of late, you can check out Dapper Bart Games over on YouTube. I'll link that in the description below. But I highly recommend if you also want to be checking out this video. I think this podcast and his recent video about the open license is going to be very useful to give you an idea of what's been going on in general. But like I said, this is more like you know how we got into a lot of things, but we are going to be discussing this in the episode, so we're getting a little bit more in depth. But if you want kind of like a primer, check out Jay's video on the subject.
Thank you.
So, anything else that you would like to say? Did you play anything in the last couple of days?
Things I've been mostly playing is I still have my mobile game. So, Azur Lane had a pretty cool event with some new American ships, which is awesome. And now it's the Lunar New Year thing, which has a bunch of little mini games, and it's kind of fun. And then I've also been playing Fate Grand Order because addiction is a real thing, people. And it's kind of a
fun. At least you're not putting money into it. At least you're not putting money into it.
I'm not putting money into it. I decided once Aniplex kind of pissed me off, I decided I would never give them a dime. So I play the game. I don't stream it anymore or anything like that. I just play it for myself and for discussion points with my brother. So most you'll get is us talking about it on stream while I stream something else. And they have a silly event right now where characters are turning chibi, so it's kind of fun. And then I'm streaming Final Fantasy Tactics Advance with my brother on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on my Twitch channel, which is Dapper Bard Game. Now I screwed it up. Dapper Bard's Tavern, excuse me, there's a S in there. And we have two more story missions left till we're done, so we're hoping to finish it this week. And then a bunch of post-game like missions to take care of. And then we'll go on to another game, probably a Robot Wars game, but who knows?
All right. Is that it? Anything else you'd like to bring up before I move
on? That's about it. Yeah, I think that covers everything.
All right, so let's talk about what I got. I got lots and lots of toys. It's actually kind of sad, really, with a lot of stuff I got. But the same thing, there's something that's really cool as well. So first things first, what I picked up, I picked up a lot of Masterverse figures. He-Man, Masters of the Universe, Masterverse. It's a successor to Masters of the Universe classics that came out like quite a long time ago from Mattel. When they did their self direct to consumer, but they squished their tactics and now they're selling these 7-inch figures, you know, in mass retail. So it's like, cool. Like, you know, this is what they should have done from the very beginning.
Well, and I understand doing a collectible kind of thing for the fans and using it as a test market. Because right now, what they got to get that kids show version, I think, that exists, that new kids show version, I think, of Masters that exists.
Yes.
I assume that would have its own toy line, but the classics really are pretty awesome.
We're in an age where we have three He-Man toy lines, if you can believe that.
Of course we do.
You have Masters of the Universe Origins, which is a homage to like the 5-inch figures from the past. Mm-hmm. You have Masterverse, which is this more collector oriented 7-inch line. And then we have just He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, which is stuff from the current Netflix show, which is actually a really good TV show.
All right.
So that's really good that they're actually covering all their bases. They have what like they call it entry grade, like an entry level like series, which is Masterverse. But if you're a kid, you just want the toys you see on TV. You have your options with just the plain Masters of the Universe stuff from toys from the cartoon. And if you're a collector, you know, if you're the hardcore and you want to go more in depth and you want to see more like, you know, esoteric characters, Masterverse is where you want to be getting a lot of your stuff. And the first one I picked up was She-Ra. And like what I like about this nice. She-Ra is like, they did something interesting with the figure. It has stuff to make her look like her original toy and to give her a modern look as well. So like if you ever seen the newer show that's on Netflix.
I got about two episodes before I wanted to actually commit self-harm because of how bad it was. But if people like it, that's cool. Not judging.
Right. But what I like about it is like it has the options to do that. It's not quite that, but you can tell like they were trying to like get the spirit of that series. Like giving her this a unique armor, the armor set you can equip on her. And that's really cool and really, really awesome. I also found that for like $10 because it was on clearance. So I'm like, fuck yeah.
Yeah, totally. If it comes with the extra armor and stuff and it's on clearance, yeah, go for that.
Yeah, so it's like I picked that up. Then I went to ALA. I picked up a few more. I picked, because thanks to the panel that we did, I just picked up model kits. I picked up what? I picked up the launch bay display piece, because like I realized that like I needed a display piece, and when I started taking photos with the display piece, and I said, because you were like curious about it, I realized it really works really well to my Transformers. Like I showed you like one that's literally a leader class, and it fit in it like very well.
Yeah, like, it worked. It looked really cool.
So like I'm really happy
that it works with larger units, because that means you could probably put a master grade in there and it'd look perfectly fine.
Or at least like put like something that's like you know like yeah 1/100th anything. I think you can get away with it, but the 1/44th is actually like the sweet spot. If you have like something that's like you know like one of those weird ones, that's like 1/174th, like 72 scale ones, like the ones from Little Panic, I think those will look. Those would actually look really good as well.
The launch bay for them wouldn't look right because of how the units are handled in that series, but that's good to know, because there's other ones that are like set pieces, like you know, in you know, wreckage of a city and stuff like that. And I'm like, okay, the launch one at least gave me the idea of like, okay, that's how large it is, that's what it'll fit, and it's really cool looking. And I've always wanted to grab some of these. I need them when I have a specific shelf or zone I would want to hook them onto, because I would love to have a ruined city one. And then put like my Gundam ground type urban combat, and have him just sit there looking all like wrecked city with his like his guns, like yeah, bring it. That could be kind of a cool looking display.
And then after that, I picked up a couple of Pokeplot, because like we were discussing like right after our panel, like you know what they need? They need like Pokemon model kits, and they're like, wait a minute, they do have Pokemon model kits, and I went kind of ham on that one. To be fair, they were like.
It's always been something I've seen and always been something I've considered, because I assume, like with Haropla, they're very, very simple, easy, just build them in like less than an hour, chillax kits.
Yeah,
and that's always a good thing.
And they're cute. They're like, it's the meme of the Metroships and saying, they're just neat.
Yeah.
And then after that, I picked up Figurized Standard Dukemon from Digimon Season 3, and I'm like, yeah, this guy definitely needs to get. I definitely want to build this guy up, because like as much as I like my Stompy boys, I want to do more stuff like outside the box. So it's like I said like when we were after the panel, like I have other kits that are like not Gundam I want to start working on, because like there's just really cool things that like outside of Gundam that I think that needs to be discussed as well.
I'm looking forward to expanding that part of my panel on how to get into Gunpla.
Yeah, and so but if you're talking about actual figures themselves, I actually picked up SH Figuarts Anya from Spy Family, because she is like the most adorable thing ever, and the figure is the most adorable thing ever, and it's like only paid like what $40, and it's like yeah, that's like the perfect price for something like that. So it's like, you know what, I like this a lot. After that, like that's all the stuff I bought at the show. And then randomly, one day after I came back, I went to Target and I found a deep discount. Like again, this was like a $30 toy that's like that was $8. I found Buzzworthy Bumblebee Pterosaur from Beast Wars.
Mm.
And what I like about it, it's because like the figure, it's because there's one that looks like the cartoon, and that's on Amazon. That's like because it's already been discontinued. That figure is like in the aftermarket, it's like $100-$150 already. The only difference between that and this one is like this one's actually based on the actual toy itself. So it's like this Dayglow red skin, and he has like a purple head. But I don't mind. I don't mind at all for like the price I paid, because I paid $8. Fuck yeah, I'll take it. And
the garish colors can be a lot of fun, especially of Transformers. That's the one thing I'm going to say in defense of things like that.
Oh, and it works perfectly for Pterosaur. It works looks really, really good. And like I said, like I'm really liking this series of Buzzworthy Bumblebee, where it's like they're giving figures another chance with more accurate colors to the animation. I really do appreciate that, or like more accurate colors to what they used to look like with the actual toy. And in some cases, like for example, they reissued like last year they reissued Dinobot from Beast Wars. And one of the things I liked about that is that. Well, we do have the regular Kingdom release. This release with Buzzworthy Bumblebee is actually colored and made to look like the actual action figure itself, which is a lot more lighter skinned. He has a different head and all that stuff. It's really, really unique, and I like that. And then once again, I went into that Will of He-Man, because like it's the beginning of it's 2023. Get out with the old, in with the new. I picked up Masterverse Movie He-Man and Movie Skeletor. I have thoughts.
Oh. One, I've seen those advertised. How are they in person?
Okay, which one, like, okay, so you want to know the good news or the bad news?
Let's do the good news first.
They look immaculate in person. Like, they look incredible.
Nice.
In person, they look amazing, especially you have on your hand. They are just like they look so cool, especially Skeletor. I think out of the both of them, Skeletor got the most attention. You can tell that they put the almost effort into that one because you see the sculpt up close and he looks like I said like there's something unique about these toys, and that they couldn't get the rights to Frank Langella and Dolph Lundgren, so they kind of sneakily went around it by doing a few things. We'll get close enough though. Skeletor gets closest. That's all I'll say. Like Skeletor is the closest to looking like Frank Langella, but then again, too, he was wearing a mask most of that time, so like, you really can't really So you can actually replicate it kind of easily. But yeah, he got the most attention. He got the most details, and you can tell they gave him the most stuff. He came with his Havoc staff, and he also came with the Cosmic Key and a couple extra hands. And what I love so much about these toys, especially with Shiro as well. They rectified a mistake that I hated so much about Masters of the Universe Classics, and they gave everybody cloth like capes and like cloth cloth goods, and like
thank you,
and like when you, and it works so good on Skeletor because he's like half his armor is like half of it is like art like plastic. There's also parts of him that's also cloth, and that's and like just, it looks incredible in person. Can't say the same about He-Man.
Oh really?
Like because He-Man has to, because He-Man like you know he didn't have the mask and everything, and he didn't have anything to hide his face. They can't really replicate the head. They can't really replicate Dolph Lundgren's face in any kind of extent. So it's like you get kind of a weird looking He-Man. It's just the weirdest looking guy ever. He's got this weird elongated face. And I'm like, oh my god, what is up with this? And what's made worse is like they knew from the start that this was gonna be a problem. And they gave you an alternate head, which is a classic looking He-Man, which is like the more like traditional He-Man that you would know from like the cartoons and all that stuff.
Yeah, I think that's the one I saw when they were displaying it.
Yeah, and that one doesn't look that good either. Like I think they made a new Mulford, and then that one looks just as bad. And I'm like, oh no.
I feel like if you made like just a generic muscular dude face and then gave him like the Dolph Lundgren hair, I think it would probably have looked fine.
Yeah, but like I said, he looks like a guy that looks like someone that went through Botox, and they're just like they have their cheeks sunken in and their face is kind of elongated. That's the biggest problem.
Oh yeah, that's a problem. You don't want your He-Man looking like Skeletor.
Yeah, he looks more Skeletor than Skeletor. But here's the good news. The good news is like the figure itself, like again, just like Skeletor, He-Man has a lot of cool things. Like his cape is real cloth. His armor can be removable. He comes with so many accessories. He comes with two knives that can be put on his, that can put like in and around it, like where in and around like his the figure. He comes with his gun, and the details on the rest of it looks incredible. Like, and there's really not much to really do. It's just a guy shirtless wearing leather shorts, and that's about it really. But they got the details on all of that, and like they got those details right. Like he's wearing gauntlets, and they got the gauntlets right. The knee pads look great. It looks great. Just that head, and also the articulation is kind of iffy because I think what ended up happening was when these are completely new molds, and it looks like the some of the cuts didn't like you know like if you want to make the if you want to have the like their arms flush, you can't do that. Like they stay somewhat like out. So if you want to keep them doing an action pose, that's fine. But if you're gonna have them like pose like you know in a neutral stance,
That's too bad.
So here's my five minute review. Here's the ending of my 5 minute review. If you're gonna buy these, like when you see them for like $25, don't pay the $32-$35. I think the $35 price point is way too much. At $25, I think that's a little bit more digestible. And if you're only going to pick up one, pick up Skeletor. And that's about it, really. Like, in terms of what I've been playing, I've been, like, after, like I've been playing Pokemon Legends Arceus, and I also been playing Pokemon on Scarlet as well, because they gave me Pokemon Scarlet for my birthday, which was in December, so I bought that and been playing that. I actually beat it. I completed it. I completed whole Pokedex. It's actually insane. It's like, I got to do pretty much everything in the game within about a month. Usually it takes me like 6 to 8 weeks or like 6 months. I like enjoying it, but like I went through like everything that's humanly possible in Pokemon and Scarlet and Violet in like 3 weeks, and I don't regret it because like even the post game stuff when you're done with the post game stuff when you play with your friends it's really good. That's what I usually do. It's like, you know, if I see my friends online, usually I play with a lot of streamers, and a lot of streamers are like, "Come on, join us!" I'm like, "Okay, fine, I'll join you guys." And usually we do a lot of what they call raids, and we do a lot of those raids, like, you know, under stream, and it's like that's what I've been doing a lot. So, like, if you're wondering how what keeps me playing, it's because it's like the community aspect. It's like it's the same thing with like Monster Hunter, where I would play Monster Hunter, and like, yeah, I did all the stuff that the main story stuff in the game, but there's so much to do afterwards. Like, you can make like and not just making armors, but like finding like that right set to make something. It's so much fun. And like they're starting to do that with Pokemon now, where it's like now you can start adjusting your Pokemon just right for these grades. And that's what I love to start doing now with these games, where it's like now I'm starting to like tweak my Pokemon just right enough to take on these raids. And it's like it's so much fun now to do that kind of thing. And then like I said, I've been playing because of that, because I'm done with that game, I started playing Pokemon Legends Arceus, and then I picked up a lot of games between all this as well. Let me see right here. I just turned on my Switch here. Let's see if it turned. It's up to my screen. Okay, I picked up a lot of games here. Let's see, I picked up Hollow Knight. I picked up Celeste, Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic 2, Retro City Rampage, and Hawaii Shakedown, which is like its spiritual successor. So I picked all those games up. Because they were like $5. They're three to $5.
It's like a Steam sale. You just see those low price. You're like, yeah, well, you know, just a couple more. Come on, man. It's not that much.
And the worst part is like that. The worst part is I think Nintendo knows. Nintendo really knows what's up. These are all on the Switch. Like they know how to get you, because like they put their games at such a price where it's like I really can't say no to this at this point.
Well, some of those games are older games too, so you're basically buying it, you know, probably a second time on a new system.
I bought
Rampage on my old PS3, I think, and now I don't have all those games, but some of those games I know were older games that were around in my PS3 days, and possibly even some were PS4 games. But you're kind of in that time period where I'm like, yeah, you could see those on major discount and just grabbing them and loading up, and like, yeah, now I got a little of everything.
Yeah, and that's what I like about the Switch, is like the Switch has become like for like smaller games like that, it's like it's become like my go-to now. It's like, you know, I love if I see like an indie game or a game that's like something that's on Steam that like everyone's talking about, I would rather pick up the Switch version of the game, because I know there's one game right now that everybody's talking about called Loop Hero. Everybody's talking about Loop Hero, and the thing is like it's on Steam. I hear nothing but great things about the Switch version. And that's like the perfect game to take with me, like if I'm playing it like, you know, on the road or something like that, or like playing it here and I got nothing else to do. It's like I just turn on the Switch really quick and that's it. And that's what I like about the Switch so much. It's like I don't have to turn on my computer or anything like that. Just like the hit a button on my Switch and like I can just play I can either play like a bigger game, like your Pokemon, or I can just be playing like a smaller game, like, you know. Like I said, like we have Retro City Rampage, which is like a game you just get go around and shoot shit. That's what you pretty much do in that game.
And game, though. I just like the.
That's great.
I have it
for the 3DS, but I was like, I'll double dip it again, and I brought it for PC, and I was like, I sell it for like $3 on the Switch eShop. I'm like, okay, let's go.
Okay, you bought the game one too many times. That's like me of Castlevania Symphony of the Night.
And that's
the original version. I got it on Xbox 360, and I got it on PS3.
You don't have that PS4 one?
The newest version I do not have, no. Because I think by the time that came out, Konami had done enough to alienate me as a fan.
Fair enough. We'll leave it at that. What else? And then that's pretty much about it, really. Like, you know, in terms of like anything else I've been up to, it's like, you know, that's it. You know, I mean, it looks like I did. It seems like I did a lot. It's because I had 7 weeks of stuff to like discuss right there. So
yeah. Versus just kind of synopsizing my stuff in a very capsule format.
Yeah, and like I said, there's gonna become a lot more like when things start to becoming a little more frequent with the show, which we hope it does. Like, there's gonna be a lot like these things are gonna be a lot less often. Regardless, though, let's start off with our main topic here because, like I said, the news is kind of sparse, and a lot of the news that we want to discuss is with this topic. So. The topic that, of course, if you didn't know, the topic was Dungeons and Dragons. It was something that came about because, well, we played a lot of it at Anime Los Angeles.
Yeah.
I want to keep on calling it Anime Expo, but it's like, no, you idiot, no.
No, it was ALA. Just go for ALA. I mean, well, okay. Once you say Anime Los Angeles for the viewing people, because obviously
no, because then I want to fall into the trap of calling it AX. That's the problem.
Okay, then stick with Anime Los Angeles. But yes, we were at Anime Los Angeles in early January. They had a really good tabletop room. I did a lot of different game options. They were also smart enough to separate the room into this is for RPG type stuff, and this is for cards and board games. And I think that's a really good idea, because that way you could actually hear each other talk when you're trying to do a mission. We both played two different games. I had two different DMs. I liked our first DM so much more. He was like a chill DM, our second DM. As I said on the podcast for Convention T, he reminded me of one of the guys I knew in junior high who just seemed to get a kick out of killing characters.
I saw a little bit of it, and I looked at the board, and I'm like, oh my god, this is a mess. Thank god I'm not playing this.
Yeah, it also him just spamming AoEs on those of us who got low on our initiative. And my character had a minus in dexterity, so I got, like, garbage initiative every time. And it just felt like we were just being punished for having bad dice rolls.
Damn.
And I'm like, I understand that a lot of these things do have AoEs, and yes, we're clustered, but you don't have to spam three in a row. Like, when the third one hit, I'm like, I'm dead. And he's like, how much HP do you have? I'm like, dude, you just hit me for 45. Like, I'm a cleric. I'm dead. Like, what do you want me to say? It doesn't matter if I kept the math for the previous two hits. You just hit me for 45. I failed the save, and you've AoE'd me three times. I think the grand total of damage was like 100, not 100 something. It was like 13 for the first hit. It was like, you know, I think I saved on the second one for like 17. So it was like 30 damage, which was already about half my life. I think I'm about 62 life, and then hit me for 45. And I was like, dude,
if it was like a role playing game, your HP would have a minus mark on it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's
to a point that I was like frustrated with him, like hitting him. Like, he's like, are you sure you're all your HP's up? Yes, you hit me with the AoEs three times. I'm freaking dead.
And, I am like, and not super even low dead.
Damaging ones. These aren't like, oh, this
old. I've been liquefied, for God's sake.
You save for 7. This is, oh, it does 45 damage, or you save for 22. You're just like, come on.
It's like, look, there's a difference between just dying and then being liquefied, and that's like liquefying at that point. Yeah. You're just like a puddle of red jelly.
Yeah, but because of how the rules work, I have to do my death saves, except for I got revived, then killed again, then revived, then killed again.
Oh, Lord.
And then the fight was over, and it was good, because if I failed another death save, I would have been full on 100% dead. So my entire, other than one action I got to make, and I should have healed myself hardcore, but I was trying to do other stuff to help out. And my character wasn't designed around healing. It was designed as a combat cleric. So now I'm a combat cleric. It's rough terrain. My life is low. It's just, it just felt like I was being picked on. And I just know his type. He's just that kind. It's like, hey, that's your fault for the dice not being in your favor. And I'm like, right, you could also not be a dick about this. You could go and say, oh, you know what? The wyvern won't like spray you with acid. I'm like, oh, okay.
So yeah, I mean, we're kind of already kind of ahead of ourselves on here, but like, I wanted to talk first about like our origins with the franchise itself. So if you can tell us a little bit about like how you got into Dungeons and Dragons, you know,
that's pretty easy. I was generally familiar with the brand, just the Zeitgeisty in the early 90s. And when I was in junior high, there was a guy, Robert, and David, or Dave, Robert and Dave, who are like basically the two main DMs of the group. They were both older kids. And I kind of got in, and first person who DM'd for me was Dave, and he killed me within like one or two rounds of combat. And I was like, cool. And then my second DM was Robert, and Robert's a lot more like storyteller type and not, you know, send a horde of monsters to murder everyone type.
Mm-hmm.
But what I gained out of that experience was learning A, the two main types of DMs you'll come across, and B, you know, some character creation stuff, and ended up just kind of making some friends. But once everyone started going off to high school and I moved, I lost my entire group and didn't really have anyone else to do with. I was able to supplement with, you know, PC games and stuff like that. The Gold Box games were a really huge thing for me. And Baldur's Gate was pretty sweet and stuff like that. So you had some cool games. And kind of just got into, like, JRPGs for quite some time because I just didn't have anyone else to play with until college. And that's when around the time third edition had existed for a few years by the time I ended up playing. And I was like, oh, okay, I get it. I see how this is different. But I was never a hardcore third edition person. And then I planned to get into fourth edition because fourth edition was, you know, 2008 or somewhere thereabouts, maybe 10. And I was like, oh, man, I'm going to super get into fourth edition. And I opened up the first rule book and I said, this is stupid and I hate it. So it wasn't until my brother got into fifth edition and I went through some of his books to where I went, oh, I like fifth edition. I see what they've changed and I like what they've changed. And that kind of got me back into D&D. Now, in the meantime, there were other games that caught my fancy, Battletech, Call of Cthulhu, stuff like that. And those were also, you know, things I was playing, but since we're just keeping this to D&D, that's kind of what it is. I DM'd a few missions, and then my brother DM'd a large campaign that you were part of, the Storm King's Thunder, and that was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of after we finished Storm King's Thunder, we all just kind of went our separate directions and haven't really played much other than the homebrew Call of Cthulhu game I made, which I want to kind of take those rules and turn them into the game I've been working on for a few years now, which I've also test played with everyone with different rule sets, and it's just ever evolving. Because making a whole game by yourself is actually a lot more complicated than one might think.
Yeah, especially when you're trying to, like, especially when you don't have anybody to like play test and see and scale things up and down, like that becomes kind of difficult.
Yep. But that's why it was fine with the Call of Cthulhu Silent Hill hybrid game thing I did. Because I had two willing players. I technically had more than that, but I was like, no more than two, otherwise this doesn't feel like Silent Hill. Silent Hill isn't a bunch of people with, like, weapons, like, killing all the monsters. It's usually a solo person, but I'm like, I can make this work of two, and I could tie their backstories together, but not have them realize they're tied together until the very end, where they're like, oh my gosh, I'm your uncle.
Like, oh, yep. God. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Uncle, it was friend of the dad, but, you know, it was kind of in that position of, like, kind of an uncle. But they didn't realize that, like, the connecting point was the dead dad betwixt the two of them. And it was like, ah! It's like, yep. I also made alternate endings for them. So we had a UFO ending, and we had the dog ending, parentheses, the happy ending, mm-hmm. and then the true ending. And they didn't fail at the true ending, so if they had failed, it just would have been the, you know, you are now forever trapped in Silent Hill and you're miserable. But they actually escaped, which is the true ending. It was a fun game to do. And I even did a video on my channel talking about what I did to change the rules and how I did it. It probably doesn't go into the full in-depth of everything I did, but it does cover a lot of the stuff I came up with.
All right. I'll put these all on our show notes. Cause like, this is really interesting.
I'm referencing a bunch of my videos.
But that does help a lot. Cause I think like it does add a lot of context to what's their proceedings as well. In terms of me, problem, you know, I when you grow up in Mexico, I grew up in Mexico, obviously. I only knew Dungeons and Dragons through like reputation. I've heard about it, and I saw the cartoon. Fantastic fucking cartoon. I think it's like one of my favorite cartoons of all time. Like
it's not a fun top cartoon. I top really 10. Enjoy it as well.
Not top 10, but it's like top 50. Like it's in somewhere in the 50s. But
it's a fun fantasy adventure isekai type series. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's like
I'd love to do a whole discussion on that, but I would definitely need to rewatch stuff.
Also, too, I think that would be also too if like when we can get Robin back, that we can start doing that as well. Because like we were talking,
there's a whole set of like rules to like play. Like they have a whole D&D book based around the cartoon.
Yeah, I think I told you that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I knew about that from like stuff like that. Like I knew it from the cartoon. I knew it about from like other media. I think like the most prominent media I remember the most coming out of it was the Capcom game, the Capcom side scroller. And
oh, yes, I remember seeing those in the arcade. I've never actually played them.
They're really good. They're as side scrollers, they're solid side scrollers. I think they're some of the best. The problem is, it's like they're like, if you're out there just to see how far you can make it on one what they call it 1cc, mm-hmm. you're shit out of luck. That game is like I think the spirit of Gary Gygax possessed Capcom, and they made the game like absurdly difficult, and it's also very long for that type of game. I think like player like they say that the player like most players like when they play an arcade game they have to be out in and out in 3 minutes, and that's fine. You know, you can get a 3 minute. You can get like 3 minutes if you don't know what you're doing. You can get like maybe 10, 20 minutes if you absolutely know what you're doing. The game I think is like 90 minutes. And like,
is it really that long?
Yeah, and I'm like, dude,
my legs would start cramping up at the machine.
That's what happened with me.
We sit there, super good, guys. I need. We need to make like a tag system where I can just tag out and like sit down for a minute. Have my other friends play my character. Get me killed too much. I only have so many quarters, man.
Yeah, but the thing was, it's like that's a problem with those games. It's like they're great, but they're way too fucking long for their own good. Because, like, for example, like
House of the Dead is probably what, a 10-minute game, maybe going through like the 5-6 stages.
15 minutes if you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
If you're going completionist, it's 15 minutes because like you gotta be. It's like. There's added stuff you need to be a crack shot at.
Yes, and certain boss fights specifically that are a real pain in the butt. But my point is that, like, yeah, going through all the stages of that, plus the cutscenes, plus, you know, the deaths you end up having, especially because some of the bosses are so damn cheap that unless you're a magic shot guy, you're not going to get out of those. It's only like a 15 or so minute game. I've beaten House of the Dead 1. It was tough, but we did it.
Yeah, let's say, like, pain. For example, for me, it takes me, if I'm just, like, shoving quarters in, it takes me 20-30 minutes to play, it takes me 20-30 minutes to go through final fight. And that's, like, that's a sweet spot right there. 30 minutes for a side-scroller beat-em-up, that's a sweet spot right there.
But, yeah, I was thinking, like, Turtles in Time isn't all that long of a game either.
The NES game is a little bit longer.
The arcade one or the Super Nintendo one is technically longer, because I think they had one or two extra levels, and even then, you can, with two players, you could go through that game and, like... 30 minutes, maybe
30, 30 45 minutes. I can tell you that. I can tell you this right now. I can tell you this right now because I played it recently on the Cowabunga. It took me to beat both of those games, both versions of those mm-hmm. games. SNES version, 45 minutes. Arcade game with like four players and we're like just jamming quarters in, like 25 minutes.
Yeah, because it has like two less levels or three less levels.
And also that's like it gets pretty mindless at certain points because The thing that kills Turtles in Time is the Technodrome, and yeah. the arcade one doesn't have that, but the SNES one does. And he's like, there's a fight where it's like if you're not accurate enough to throw the foot soldiers at Shredder, you're gonna be there for like a while.
Yes, I have a lot of difficulty with that one because it's a specific button combination you need to press to do that, and the game doesn't have like a tutorial mode. So if you don't have the instructions right by your side or someone with you goes, oh, hold like. L or R when you do a throw, and I'm like, oh, okay.
So or I mean, so, it is. So yeah, going way back to Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah,
it's a good game. I mean, I love those games because like you know they look really good aesthetically. It got me introduced more properly other than the cartoon. Because I think like the cartoon was like it'd been off the air for a certain time, and then for like about a minute it was back on TV. And
yeah, at some point in the early '90s, I think.
Yeah, so sometime in the early '90s, they started re-airing the show, and like that was great because like that's where I kind of rediscovered the series.
It was one of those shows where I think when I first watched it, because I think I first watched it actually in the '90s rerun of it, I was like, "Man, this thing looks so old. No, this is so lame. All these kids." And then like the monsters would show up, and I'm like, "Oh wow, this is like actually taking itself seriously. We just got these super colorful children like running around in a world that could easily murder them."
Yeah, it's like, you know, like 1 minute, like literally, like the first episode, they fight Tiamat.
Yeah.
like, oh, we're going there right off the bat. Okay, cool. Finding a multi-headed, like, not just a multi-headed Hydra, but a Hydra, like, different kind of, with different dragon heads. Like, ooh.
No, it's the dragon queen. Like, that's on a whole nother level. Like, no one's high enough level to fight that. Even when you're highest level, you're still going to have a lot of trouble.
So, yeah, so it's stuff like that kind of got me introduced. And then the less we talk about the movie, the better. All I got to say is I did see the movie in theaters.
I did not see it in theaters. I have seen it multiple times because it made bad movie night multiple times, depending who I was with.
What I was going to say is, like, it was me, my sister, and her ex-boyfriend at the time. He took me to watch it for my birthday, and we came all three of us, and I was like, what the fuck did we just watch?
It's one of those movies that has, like, the plot, you're sitting there, you're trying to figure it out. You're like, okay, so we've got these two, like, thief guys, and they're trying to get the MacGuffin thing. And then there's, like, this whole other bigger story. But the big problem is with the movie is it almost acts as if, oh, you know these locations and this, like, royal family and stuff. And I'm like, no, I don't. You made up all these names and you don't give me exposition to explain what the hell they are and why I should consider them important. The thing that saving grace that movie and why it made a bad movie night so many times is Jeremy Irons just eating the scenery like it's made out of chocolate.
Yeah, it's like he knew what he was up. He knew the role. He knew what he was up. He saw the script. Like, I'm just going to...
Went in thinking, okay, cool, I'm going to be evil wizard in a fantasy movie. And then when he saw the script and he saw what the sets looked like, he's like, oh, screw it. I'm going for the scenery and I'm going hard.
Hey, you know, he's an Academy Award winner. Did he win an Academy Award?
I know he's been nominated. I don't know if he's actually won. That's usually not something I pay attention
to. Anyways, let's just assume that he did. It's like, yeah, it's like, that's not to say he's above it, but it's like, too, it's like, he's also one of these where, like, he saw what was going on. It's like, I'm just gonna cash in my check now and just go at it.
You got Renaissance Fair level costumes. You got, Hercules Legendary Journeys level sets. And you have reboot level special effects.
Oh God, yeah.
And you're just kind of put in this position of, like, I guess that's what a dragon looks like.
I think someone said it best because, like, they were describing these movies because it was also released by the same company. It's like it's a typical new line cinema movie of the 1990s. It's like it feels the same way too in terms of, like, style and looks to Mortal Kombat.
Oh my God, it does. Yes.
And so, like, this other podcast I listen to, the Weekly Planet, or Mr. Sunday Movies, they make a mention to the fact that, like, there's this style of early 90s, like, New Line Cinema, like, style, and that fits that style perfectly. It's like, mm-hmm. The effects are not really there, and, like, it looks like they filmed it somewhere, like, on location, but it's like they filmed it at someone's backyard, and it's like, they kind of look like they did it on the cheap, but they kind of didn't. So it makes me wonder where all the money went.
It also has that ending where they're like, it's like, to be continued. It's like, no, never. To be continued, never.
Yes. And so, I mean, that's how I got introduced to it. And I didn't really get to play Dungeons & Dragons till actually King's Thunder. For me, that's why, like, if you were wondering, like, why are you playing, like, why are you doing this? And it's like, because this is my first time kind of, like, playing it, and, like, you know, I had to get my...
You should have let me and Ethan know so we could have done that tutorial thing a little bit sooner. But we did a tutorial thing with you, and then you became an amazingly good player. You understood how to use your fighter really well. You're a fast learner, and I do appreciate that.
Yeah, and so...
a lot of players will do the whole, like, yeah, I got it. And then they just, like, dude, why did you not use your such and such? What's that? How do you not know what your character can actually do? Like, yes, I was stingy when I played with my Bardic Inspos, and I probably should use those a lot more often than I did. I should have just spammed them, and that's kind of on me. Although it'd be easier to do if we were on a legit table than playing on a virtual tabletop. So yeah. That's also my issue with that one. Because when you want to do the reaction type, which, by the way, they changed for 1D&D to a reaction now, and I'm like, thank you. Instead of handing someone the die and hoping they remember they have it, our house rule was reaction, and then it just became down to me being too stingy and only using them occasionally. they've updated Bardic Inspo in ways that I actually like. Not to jump the gun for 1.1, but they have, and I do appreciate that. Not 1.1, at 1D&D.
At 1D&D or 5.5 or whatever we're going to be calling it.
One thing, my one rule I've always had is that I don't care if you're a newbie, just when I give you the tutorial, listen and ask questions. Because you were really smart with your whole, okay, what are all my action options? And that's where you learn to be in dodge stance. That's where you learn to ready an action and things like that, which you then utilized when necessary.
Yeah.
Like, oh, there's no enemies I'm close enough to attack. I'm going to go into dodge stance. So when
if I need to draw aggro to me, I'd go into dodge stance like they can come toward me.
Mm-hmm. And as you played, and especially from the way that Robbie played, you started to learn how to do like the free actions of like, you know, yelling certain things out and trying to get like the attention of the monsters, you know, to play more into your character.
Yeah, and like I said, this was like, and I played other role playing games before. I had a horrible experience for a couple of weeks playing Werewolf the Apocalypse and Vampire the Masquerade. Like,
I just had to talk to my brother about those, and I don't remember because he knew someone who was into those and was playing one of them, and I can't remember which one he was playing.
I played both of them. And I can tell you this right now. It's just like, I don't know. It's not really my vibe. He's like, oh, you have to play Despicable People. It's like, no, I don't want to play Despicable People. I kind of want to play, like, heroic characters, you know?
Well, the thing about Vampire is it's very much built around, like, the political struggle between the various clans. And if you don't know the lore, you're just going to sit there being, like, Guy. And you're like, hey, I'm Guy.
Yeah, I think,
I don't know well enough what they actually do in that one. I'm assuming it's similar. The one I thought that sounded cool, because they actually did a game, and that's how I learned about it, was Hunter. And I'm like, whoa, you're telling me we're just like a clan of hunters, we're armed to the teeth, we're gonna kick down the door like Blade and just wreck the club? I'm down, let's do that one.
I wanna be that. It's like, no.
I'm so down with that one. Yeah, let's wreck some vampires, let's wreck some werewolves, I don't care.
Yeah, I wanna do that. And you know, but like, no, because like, I think they expect, like, because like again, you just described Game of Thrones to me. It's like, I guess that's what they wanted. And I'm like,
yep. It's kind of designed to be. It's the reason I never got into it. I don't want to learn all this lore in order to, like, you know, trick someone into giving me a lesser rate on the blood bank charges or something. And like,
for example,
I want to carry a shotgun that shoots silver. A shot, so I can just shotgun werewolves, and then I'm on a holy hand grenade of Antioch to chuck into the room full of vampires. Like, that's what I want.
And the thing is, too, I also realized why it was not an enjoyable experience, because like it was like no more than 100 people playing as well.
Well, when you have too many people playing, that becomes the other issue, because again, you can get lost in whatever else is going on, or worse yet, something is happening with like these five players, and everyone else is just kind of sitting on the sideline waiting for that to resolve.
It's
also the issue, I think, with Shadowrun. I've never played Shadowrun, but I've heard other people's experiences, where it's a really cool game in concept, but when, like, the hacking stuff is, like, this extended set of things they have to do to get through all the security, and meanwhile, every other player just has to sit around and wait for the hacking to be done. Because what would, you know, in normal life, they're tapping on a keyboard, or they have their headset on, and it's happening within seconds, is not the way that, obviously, there's dice rolls and discussions and whatever. So, you know, then all the action players are just kind of sitting there going like, all right, anytime you're done to turn off that security so we can go to the next room would be great. And I'm like, yeah, that's the problem. I don't want a game where I'm just sitting around doing nothing because we got to go through the whole hacking mini game for an hour and a half.
Yeah, and that was the biggest problem with, like, Vampire the Masquerade for me, because it was like, we had all these people playing and, like, you know, it was fine. I knew some of the people. It was one of the things where it's like, I just kind of felt like a generic number in this sea of other people. And other people got to do all the cool stuff. Like, they got to go to the fireworks factory. I didn't.
Yeah.
And I didn't even get the glimpse. I didn't even know they were at the... That's how bad it is. They were at the fireworks factory, and I didn't even know there was a fireworks factory. That's how bad it was. So it's like, I guess that first experience, like, and that was my very first experience playing a role-playing game, period. And that's not the best experience
in
the
world. It's not a good starter game either.
Yeah.
Even if you only have five people around the table, that's still not a great starter game. In my opinion, some people can disagree.
But. Then after that, I gave Scarlet my old Sailor Moon role-playing game, because I was like, maybe you might have a little bit more use with the game than I do.
I DM'd a game of that. That's the one where Stan famously used a chair And I was like, aha, the monster has defense against non-magical attacks and rolled a crit. And I was like, and Sailor Jupiter uses a folding chair to kill the bear monster.
And
one shot.
That's on
like,
grandfather.
I as a DM was defeated. Because I was like, your stupid folding chair, this is so dumb, and I can't wait for it to blow up in your face. Oh, it's going to be so great. And then instead of blowing up in his face, he just rolled a crit. And I was like, no! Its magic defense means nothing!
But regardless, like I said, that was my very first like full on role playing game that I played. Like, you know, that's not like this game where like I'm just a mindless number. I was doing help too. Unfortunately, no one to play Usagi. So like, oh, fuck. Well, fuck it. I'm Usagi then. I got to be the leader of the team now. And that's the same.
It's really interesting getting used to that system because like, the game is incredibly weighted towards the Senshi, so to make anyone feel like they're actually under threat, you have to overpower, like, everything. But, like, for example, I think I had Emerald or something was, like, the villainess, and I think all of you ganked her so quickly, she didn't even have the chance to act, and it just was, like, it got to her turn, and technically she was at, like, a negative HP. I'm like, okay, well, according to the rules, she can't die here, because she has to die when she dies in the series. So she does the whole, I'll get you next time, and just, like, leaves. I got no chance to act. I was like, ow. She just tanked like 3 or 4 shots from the very Senshi playing.
Like, yeah. So it was stuff like that. Oof. It was stuff like that that got me more into it. And you guys proposed doing the Dungeons and Dragons over the internet. And that's where it started. And then like the first character I rolled was Nobel. And Nobel, like I said, like at the time, I didn't know really what to do with the character because like that was my very first.
I helped you through the creation of your first couple characters. I just wanted to just give you something simple, and fighters tend to be simple.
Yeah, and then the second one I got was Colrunt. Not Colrunt, it was Drog.
It would be Drog, where you made your first Berberian.
Yeah, I made my first Berberian.
And you actually played him pretty well. You knew when to use your rages. The problem is all the cool stuff you would have gotten was at the end of this little, you know, mission thing. Like right around your level 5, you start getting some really cool bonuses. And unfortunately, you stopped right before this. Our rogue in the group was getting like a bunch of cool stuff because rogues get a lot of good stuff early on. And I believe we had like a druid in there and a cleric in there, so they had a bunch of spells and stuff. Your character was insanely simple, and it's like, all right, now you're right to the point where you're gonna get good stuff, and that's the end of this story.
I saw the stats, you know, if ever we want to crack that open again, you know, hey, it's right there. Now that I have like a lot more experience, especially after we did it at Anime LA. Like, you know, I have at this point a perfect understanding of what I'm supposed to be doing now. And
yeah.
Like I said, like, you know, the only reason why I stopped is like Storm King's Thunder, well, as much as I loved it, as much as I love doing it, it's like I don't think I can take another huge quest like that. Like the smaller ones like that, I'm fine.
Yeah, that just comes down to me or my brother writing something. He was writing something, I just don't know what its current status is. I'm helping Erica kind of write a mission, so that might become a thing, but whoever wants to, I mean, like if Robbie messaged me tomorrow, I would totally be like, yeah, I'm down. Mm-hmm. God, I just realized when I said Robbie, it's not the Robbie from this show.
I mean, Robin, if you're talking about,
okay.
Robbie is
a friend from the game. Sorry for people who probably didn't see the stream. Robbie was a friend in the game who played our barbarian in Storm King's Thunder, and he is also a DM, and he also creates missions. So cut all that.
so that gives us kind of like how we were like introduced and all that stuff with Dungeons and Dragons. Like I said, it's interesting that we kind of like experienced it secondhand before we did. You were more like you saw it and then you got introduced through it like through other people. I saw it through like other media, where it was just like, oh, I saw the Capcom games, I saw the cartoon, and it's like I saw this other stuff surrounding it, and I knew the culture around it. I knew like, you know, what a D20 was and all that stuff before going into it. Now that I kind of have like a little bit more, now that I have actually played it and I'm a little bit more experienced underneath my belt, you know, I feel a little more confident. Like I can only say I'm a fan of it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It really comes down to who you're playing with. That's what I've learned over the years. If you're playing with, like, chill people, then you can have a really good time. If you have a jerk, even one jerk, whether it's the DM or just one of the players, it'll just kill your experience. It's unfortunate, and there is no real fix for that. That's the problem with randos versus playing with friends, which is why there's, like, a local place that does D&D games and what have you, and there's always people looking for new players and what have you. Sorry.
Oh, that's fine.
Indigestion. So there's a local place that ends up, you know, hosting games and what have you, and they have people going like, yeah, we're just looking for new players, or if anyone wants to start a game, I'm a player. And I'm like, I really want to do this, but I'm so nervous about working with randos, because the last thing I want is like, oh, dude, if Randy screws around on this game one more time, I'm quitting as the DM. Like, I can't take Randy, you know, always going like, oh, I'm going to go to the bar and get drunk and hook up with the ladies. Oh man, I only want to get the. I'm gonna go to the store and see if they have the powder of itching, and I'm just gonna use it on our thief because I think it's funny. You know, and I'm just like, don't do that. Or worse yet, the thief who steals from the party. I also have a huge hatred for. It's one thing if you made a running joke betwixt two players, like if me and my brother decided my brother was a rogue and I was whatever, and the running joke is he's always taking my stuff. Then, like, that would be fine because me and my brother decided this is how we're going to play this. And he'll never take anything that would be, you know, detrimental to me. Like, he's not going to take my weapons. And I go, where's my sword? Dude, where's my sword? Like, not that, but it'd be one of those, like, oh, by the way, when Jared's character is sleeping, I go in and I just kind of swipe a few of those rubies that he got from the last mission. I'm like, what, dick? He's like, oh, don't worry, I'll buy you something cool with them. You know, something like that, where if it's a joke and you can tell it's a joke between us, then it's okay. But, like, I hate it when someone's like, yeah, so I didn't think I got enough treasure, so when the party's sleeping, I steal, like, 15 gold from each party member. And it's just like, dude, what the hell?
Yeah, and, like, the most I'll do, but this was also in character when I was playing as Drog, was, like, I stormed in and I went so nonsense on pretty much a boss. But then again, too, like, that was the intent of the character to start with. It wasn't me trying to hijack the game or anything like that. It was just like, that's something that my character would do.
Those are acceptable actions. Though usually you strategize before having the person rush in, and you just decided, my character's rushing in. And it's like, all right, there's some zombies and a necromancer, but sure, go for it.
Yeah, but like, he's...
And then my brother used his teleport ability to get a attack on the boss and was able to kill the boss because he was distracted.
So, I was hoping someone would do that. So
strategy, it worked out despite the fact that there was no strategy. It just happened to be that Ethan realized what was going on. He's like, I can look through this window here, right? I can use my shadow step to just show up right next to him and I'll be in the shadows, right? I'm like, yes. So in the shadows, I'm technically hidden. I'm like, yeah, you're behind him and in the shadows. Cool. Then I'm going to roll for an attack. And since I'm a rogue, I'm like, since you're a rogue, he's like, I get that bonus damage as well. Mm-hmm. Yep. Because the guy wasn't supposed to be heavily powerful. This wizard guy was supposed to be an apprentice necromancer. He's incredibly frail, as most wizards are frail. But the whole point was supposed to be zombies would hold you off, and he was going to be shooting, you know, different spells at the party, including he did have a magic missile that could have wrecked the party pretty hard. Other than Drog, I think Drog could have tanked it, but almost anyone else probably would have been taken out by his magic missile.
Mm.
I had it more for Ethan's character because I'm like, oh, rogue? Okay, well, I know you have next to no HP, so a low-level magic missile will still wreck you. And you can't dodge it, which is nice. But then, you know, he took advantage of the distraction you caused, killed the boss, and I was like, I honestly can't be upset about this. That was actually pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And then played it off like, yeah, dude, of course I teleported. I'm with rogue.
But... I mean, so yeah, I mean, all that aside, you know, obviously, like, we can go more into, like, the history and stuff like that, other franchise stuff, but, like, oh my god, that'd be torture for someone listening. But I guess, like, you know, we discussed a little bit about our experiences playing 1D&D as well. So, you want, like, if anybody's not familiar with that, that's supposed to be next up. That's, like, the next edition of Dungeons and Dragons.
Currently, there are playtest materials. They started coming out last year. They will be more coming out this year. I'm waiting for the next one, in fact, before I possibly do a review on my channel. I'm back and forth whether or not I'll do it, just because of current drama going on with Wizards of the Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And the new edition will be out next year, supposedly spring, but we'll see what happens. From my point of view, it plays kind of 5.5. There's some differences in character building, but on combat and everything else feels about the same as it was, which is not a bad thing. I liked 5 a lot, so just taking 5 and just refining it a bit is not a bad thing in my book. The building your character thing, I have some mixed feelings on some of the stuff, but I like the redesigns they've done for the Ranger. The new options for the Bard are pretty nice. Rogues are about the same, and Clerics are about the same. So that. But there are some issues of, like, the amount of equipment you begin with is significantly less than it used to be. And depending on your backstory, which adds a lot of your equipment, it can completely, like, make you under-equipped. Like, a rogue I've recently created for the potential pest game we're going to do later on is super under-equipped. Like, I mean, it works fine for him. He can use his short bow and he'll be, you know, no real problems because he's a gnome rogue. So hiding and then sniping people would work pretty well for him. It's not exactly the rogue I wanted. It's just the rogue I kind of have. So it's just, you know, how it can be sometimes. But the one thing I will say is that when we played with Yumi and the rando at ALA, it was actually a lot of fun because, one, our DM was a great DM who was kind of making it up on the spot, which I do kind of appreciate. And B, I think we synergized pretty well as a party, kind of taking the roles we needed to take.
Yeah, and I have to agree because, like, you know, when I was, because like, I rolled a completely new character, as like, other times whenever I used to do this, I just said, hey, you know, what's a good way to optimize my character, this and that, blah, blah, blah. But it was the first time I was, like, asking questions, like, hey, you know, well, you think this would work for this, and, you know, this would work for that, and I just kind of min-maxed myself a character to my specifications, and, you know, you guys were like, oh, wow, you actually did a really good job with, like, you know.
You did a strength ranger, yes. Didn't you?
Tank ranger.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, yeah, so you're high con, that's right.
Because it was like, again,
which is kind of cool.
So it was like, because I originally, like, again, I thought there was going to be more people, and I thought there was going to be a little more people to play with, and I thought, like, okay, these guys, like, I started seeing, like, everybody's, like, loadouts. Like, I was overhearing everyone's, like, kind of loadouts. I was like, these guys need healing, so, like, I better be the healer. So I'm going to set myself as a healer, and then, but then that kind of, like, got reversed, where it's like, you guys are healing me now.
Well, what ended up happening is we were supposed to also have a rogue, but the rogue had something else come up, so she couldn't join us. So she created her rogue and then found out, oh no, I got to go to this other thing, sorry. And then at that point I was like, well, I guess I'll just take up a cleric because I didn't know you were doing like a healer type ranger who's designed to be tanky. So I was like, okay, I'll just take up the cleric. I'll do the healing because our other person's a bard and I've played bards. Bards can be a bit fragile. You got to really play them right or you're going to be screwed over. And then it turned out you were also, so we had like all three of us had healing ability options, which was kind of unexpected, and it was like, oh, okay. But there's cool things they did. They made Turn Undead also do the damage now. I mean, it does require level 5 to do the damage, but, and you get Turn Undead, I think, on level 2? So it's not even that long before you get the damage bonus along with it, which, thank you. It was one of the things I liked about Turn Undead back in the day, but it decided to, like, separate it by a drastic margin in 5e for whatever reason. So making it closer is good. I would honestly have made it part of the skill from the get-go and maybe make the skill available at like level 3. I compromise on that one, but whatever. I'm glad that the damage thing came back. But it was just kind of funny because we didn't really talk about anything, so we just did that. Otherwise, I probably would have just taken her rogue and just went in and started doing some stabs.
Yeah.
And I'd have been all fragile and be like, protect me, Ranger.
Yeah, I thought I made it clear that what I was trying to do, but I guess you guys didn't get the memo, or I guess I should have made it more clear.
Well, by the time you were at that point, I had already kind of selected. I knew the one girl wasn't going to be joining us, so then I took a cleric because I was like, okay, well then clerics can kind of tank a little bit. We can kind of deal. Clerics are the healer type jack of all trades, while your bard is usually your damage dealer type jack of all trades. So because of that, we were kind of put in a position like, okay, this will work pretty fine. Because if I have to go up and, you know, if he does the stabs, I can heal both of you. If I do the bonks with my mace or hammer or whatever I had in that character, then, you know, the bard could potentially provide the backup we need. Like, this works either way. And then you're like, and I'm a healer too. I'm like, okay, cool. So we're all stocked with healing. That's awesome. Even though there's some significantly more useful ranger powers, when I looked at that spell list of the, whatever they call the new, I have a term, primal. the primal spell list that rangers get to use. I looked at that and was like, oh man, maybe I should make a ranger. I could make a magic themed ranger who would just wreck people. Because there's some really good spells in the spell list.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, maybe it's one of the things that's like, maybe I had to look more in depth and like learn a little bit more on the character creation, because like I was still kind of unsure on a lot of things, but like for the most part, like, you know, I felt kind of confident, and like, you know, if we do eventually get back to it again, I will like look, I'll do a little bit more research onto like how to make a character more proper. But I think you
did a great job with your first character creation. There's little things I would have done differently. They provided us of two uncommon items, and you chose two weapons. And it was like, oh, I would have chosen an armor, unless you're dual wielding, which I don't remember if you're dual wielding or not.
I think I was dual wielding, but
if you're dual wielding, then yes, I get it. Otherwise, I would have gone with, of course, my preferred favorite uncommon item, Shield of Sentinel, because I hate being surprise attacked. Mm. Freaking hate surprise attacks. But other than that, I mean, like my rogue couldn't that I created, and I decided, because we're playing a level 5 game, just for anyone who cares. My rogue that I did create doesn't have that, because rogues can't use shields. Mm-hmm. So I gave him bracers of archery and dust of sneezing and coughing.
Okay.
Which it works with his personality. He's essentially kind of a con artist kind of guy. So, and it, in the description, it says it is indistinguishable from powder of invisibility, which means it's really there for the DM to have that vial there, and someone takes, ooh, powder of invisibility, and then screw over, you know, the team. Versus his thing is all like, ooh, I could sell this to some moron who's going to think it's powder of invisibility. But I can also use it in combat, because I could, like, you know, chuck it at the enemies or what have you, and then the enemies are suddenly incapacitated for a set amount of time, or however good their constitution is. And then we can, you know, wail on them and not be worried about too many counterattacks.
Yeah, fair enough.
So I was thinking on that one, and then my brother for this test game will be doing a bard, but I don't know his full details because we haven't really talked much about it.
All right. But yeah, like, you know,
but what I was going to say is that I think both of us generally like the new character creation modifications overall. And it would be nice to see more classes. I think that's going to be a bigger determining factor.
Yeah, and that...
However, as much praise as we're giving to 1D&D, Wizard's behavior in the last few weeks really, like, dampens this. And it's like my brother and I were both talking about this on our stream, going, man, I really like this and this, though this and this should change. And I really want to enjoy this, and then Wizards is being jerks. And I'm like, yep. And this is kind of putting me in this weird, I don't know how to approach this thing. So I'm glad I can talk about it here. You know, with you know, and be able to explain my feelings on this, because this really should be something I should be hyped about, and Wizard's behavior has not put me in the hype mode.
Not just that, I think having someone from the outside like myself can ask questions, like can ask a little bit more in depth questions as to like what's been going on as well, because like I have a vague idea what's going on. I like not only how I know what's going on, but like I want to hear it from an expert's point of view, and I can then give like the layman, like the common man's like view on what's going on, and it's not good either way. That's the unfortunate thing, because like you know, for those that don't know, correct me if I'm wrong on this one. The Wizards of the Coast, aka Hasbro, they are going to make they're going to start making the open game license for D&D, which is I think like D5.
Okay, so the Open Gaming License has been around since 3rd edition. It basically allows people to create third-party content for D&D with basically very few restrictions. So people will make books that have brand new character options or brand new weapons and armor or brand new missions, things like that. And it's a little bit more complicated than that, but that's the general gist of it. And we've more or less had it through 5th edition. And after that one, they've decided we're going to change up the contract, which is where all these problems come in, because some of the things they decided in the early versions that got leaked by developers who got a hold of those contracts were not positive.
Oh, no.
In fact, if anything, it felt like they were trying to build a monopoly.
Which is very contradictory. Just, I think very, very contradictory for a lot of things, especially since
it goes against the spirit of the original license. The original license's idea was, hey, let's all create stuff for this game we love.
Well, not just...
And the new one is like, hey, create stuff, but under our extreme supervision. And if we like it, we can keep it for ourselves.
Wasn't there also something too about like you had to pay a certain license fee as well concerning it?
There was no major license fee, but you had to report how much money you were making, and if you made over a set amount, there is a 25% tithe back to, or tax, or whatever you want to call it, back to Wizards. So if you make over 750k, you got to give 25% of that to them. Mm. Now, that's been removed in the most recent draft. There is no reference to royalties or profit.
All right. So, yeah, because I remember hearing that like that was going to be like the big thing of that they were going to start charging, that they were going to start asking for, they were going to start charging more for this open license going forward. But, you know,
the big thing they're charging for is D&D Beyond. Mm. It's going to have a subscription fee in order to access your stuff. You want to use homebrew stuff, you got to pay the subscription fee. You want any of the new content, you got to buy it through here, or through there, rather, through D&D Beyond. And D&D Beyond has a little bit of free stuff, and occasionally they would just give away, like, certain things. So, for example, if you wanted to create a human fighter on D&D Beyond, you could, but your human fighter could basically just be a champion, which is generic fighter, or, like, one other class, and, like, that's it. One other subclass, rather, and that's it. Versus if you bought the content stuff, you could then have access to the other subclasses. Otherwise, your digital version couldn't only be certain things, which is highly annoying.
Yeah, it's like DLC locking you out of progression.
Yeah, and there were limits like that on the original one, but the new one, you know, it's not just these things. It's also like a subscription fee that I heard was supposed to be $30, which seems absurd to me. And I'm like, that cannot... $30 for the year? Okay. $30 a month? You're insane.
Yeah, no.
And I wasn't clear on which one it is. I think they're being very cagey with the current D&D Beyond, like what it's going to cost and what have you. But I'll say this. When they started announcing that D&D Beyond was going to get these changes and what have you, like 40% of the people who had subscriptions, which is a significantly smaller fee, I believe, just closed out their accounts.
I don't blame them.
So much so, it crashed the server. Oh. So many people were quitting. It was a huge deal. People are very angry about how the players are being treated, and obviously the third-party people are being angry about how they're being treated.
Yeah, and like that's just like, you know, it just sounds like a huge mess altogether, because like, you know, from someone looking out, it's like, you know, it's already like, you know, it's already bad enough as is from someone looking out that doesn't really have kind of like a grasp of it, but like this is now made compounded a lot worse. And you can see that, like, I mean, it makes no sense either, because like, you know, for the most part, like, you can get a lot of this stuff, I wouldn't say free, it was more readily, all this stuff should be more readily available, and all this stuff should be more accessible, especially to content creators as well, like for your like yourself. But the way this is all handled, it just feels kind of like, it feels kind of backwards, really. And the worst part is, it's not just a Wizards of the Coast problem, it's a Hasbro thing altogether. Because I'm starting to notice a lot of things with Hasbro where they're kind of like clamping down. Like, you know, like, they're like, they don't know what to do with Power Rangers. And it's like, that's kind of like causing a lot of problems with Power Rangers. Transformers, and then G.I. Joe, same thing. It's like, I don't know. As a matter of fact, it's interesting that this is all happening, because They have a 5th edition type-ish game for Transformers and G.I. Joe that just came out recently. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, so those that brought the license, if that goes to fruition, this new open license, would it mean that in some ways these poor companies that are making content based on the characters that are owned technically by Wizards of the Coast, that's the when they have to pay for that? Top?
The G.I. Joe game is more complicated, because technically, in the Open Gaming License, you can only get Wizards of the Coast stuff, which does not include Hasbro stuff. So you can technically use things from, like, say, Magic the Gathering, but you can't use things from G.I. Joe. Hmm. So if a third party, and I don't know if a third party or Wizards, I don't know why Hasbro wouldn't just have Wizards make the G.I. Joe RPG, but I think it is a third party. They had to then get the okay from Hasbro and the okay from, and use the Open Gaming License from Wizards, assuming they used a D20 setup for their game. But here's the thing. That's under the old 1.0A which is the version from 5th edition, and anything prior to the new version being posted will still be under that and will remain under it. You don't have to change. The 1.1 said you have to change. The 1.2 says you don't. You can remain on 1.0A.
Okay.
Sorry I'm throwing all these names, but it's just like that's what all the contracts have, these numbers, and just it is what it is. Essentially, if you make something before the newest version becomes available, you can be on the old version and remain on the old version. But any content you make after that has to be compliant with the new version.
Mm.
So let's just say I made a Thundercats RPG. I somehow got all the rights and could do that. And that came out. Then I want to make my supplement book next year, but the new contract is up. The supplement book would have to be under the new rules, while the original book is under the old rules. Oh. If that makes any
sense.
Yeah,
it's like anything you make before then counts for then, and then but you won't be grandfathered in from that content. But if you do something afterwards, then that's where the problems start to arise.
Yes, because some of the things are less harmful to like using someone else's IP and significantly more harmful to using theirs. For example, there's a rule in there that essentially says, and they've changed this from the original one, was anything you make, we technically own, has now been changed to anything you make, that's cool. If we happen to make something similar, you can bring us to court, but you can only bring us to court if you can outright prove theft. So if something is very similar, that is not evidence, according to the contract you've signed to make D&D products. So, for example, if I made an adventure where a Death Knight has taken over a city, and you have to fight through a bunch of undead to fight the Death Knights, and they make something where a lich has taken over a city, and you got to fight all through all these undead to get to the lich boss at the end, you know, and it's the same city, and it's still a bunch of undead, technically, I can't sue them because this is just different enough that it doesn't count.
If they
release something that was exactly the same as mine with the Death Knight, and he had the exact same name and the exact same city and all that, then I could prove theft saying this is exactly mine. Here's the NPCs. Here's your NPCs. Here's the map of the city. Here's your map of the city. Like, then I can do that. But all they would need to do is make, like, minor changes, and suddenly I'm powerless. Mm. And that's the new contract. There's also a whole bunch of weird restrictions for virtual tabletops. I'm kind of in the middle of reading that, and I'm like, wait, but if I was running, say, Roll20 or something, I don't see why I should be under their, like, noose. Like, how does that work? But I guess it's because they have the official character sheets and stuff in there. So if they're going to have one D&D material in there, they have to then follow this contract? Still seems kind of odd to me, because it feels like the contract shouldn't be able to control that kind of stuff. So I'm still, though, some of the legalities feel very questionable to me, and according to various law people, it seems like a lot of what they're trying to push for is very questionable in terms of legality. So that will cause them issues unless they tighten up the wording and tighten up what they can actually do with this contract, because I'm like, I don't feel like some of these things you can control. It's a whole mess, and every time they make a move, especially if their PR statements and stuff that they put around it are not feeling very positive, they feel like, you know, distractions. Like, they do a whole, oh, this whole thing was designed to prevent, like, hate speech being in D&D. And I've asked multiple people, I'm like, can you tell me the module or the, companion book or anything that had hate speech or racism in it? Like, someone please find me that book. Now, I assume you might have that in a module where you're taking on an evil overlord guy who has oppressed elves and uses them as slaves or something, and you could go, okay, but he's the bad guy. Like, that's just what the bad guy is going to say, because he's a mean slave, you know, wizard guy or whatever. Like, I don't feel like I should lose my thing because I made the bad guy villainous. Like, the bad guy should be villainous. That's kind of the point of the bad guy. You know, he's supposed to be evil, so that the good guys feel good when they beat him up and save the city. Everyone goes, yay, we freed all the elves and killed the evil wizard. We are the heroes.
Right.
But it also, since I've read the contract, also affects conduct, which means if I have an off-color joke on Twitter and it upsets someone at Wizards, they could technically revoke my contract.
What?
Yep. My conduct cannot be, it has to be within, you know, kind of, I can't be mean or harmful or whatever, but there's no list of what equates that in the contract, which means, and it literally says, we decide what falls under these behaviors. So now, if I make something, I need to, like, watch my P's and Q's, because otherwise Wizards can just revoke my contract, and I have to take down any, you know, sales of my stuff because it is now no longer officially sanctioned, or they'll sue me. It's like, what? And the worst part is, this could go to extreme levels. This could go to a, oh, what if they happen to really, really dislike, you know, one of my friends I've live streamed with, and suddenly say, well, but you're guilty by association because this person has this controversy happening, or we don't like this person because they don't like our products. I mean, yeah, I follow people who definitely are not fans of Wizards. And does that mean that because I follow these people on Twitter or YouTube, that suddenly my products are now null and void because now I'm a bad party because I happen to follow someone who disagrees with their business practices? Although, heck, they're going to see my videos and find out I disagree with their business practices. So it's that kind of thing for me where I'm like, those kind of levels, that weird Big Brother's watching you kind of thing kind of freaks me out a little bit. And I'm like, guys, I'm fine for some sort of form of morality clause, but I'd really like it if it was clarified as to what it specifically was and why. Because this whole, oh, we don't want hate speech in our games, and I'm like, you need to show me the game modules that were created that are filled with hate speech. Find me the one that's the super racist module for D&D, please. Because as far as I know, that doesn't exist, and if it did, I'm sure it would have made huge freaking headlines. So yeah, the contract's weird, and there's things I'm like, I don't feel like you can enforce this on some level. This feels like this is the, we want to have arbitrary power over people that we disagree with. And I don't like that. That makes me nervous. Now, bear in mind, this is only for third-party producers of product. That means if Rams makes some sort of snarky joke about a movie he didn't like, and that upset with, or what's that? Perfect example. Let's say Rams doesn't like the D&D movie that's coming up this year and gives it a bad review. And they say, well, that's disparaging our brand and therefore we're revoked. You can't prevent Rams from playing D&D. That's not how that works. If he owns the book, he owns the book. It's in his hand. He has it. So I want everyone to understand that this is about third-party developers. This is about, you know, your DM's Guild friends, which we have some. It's those people that are now under a microscope because a contract says so, and not for the actual players. If I grab the book for one D&D player's guide so I can have the alternate character rules and classes and stuff like that, and we're all playing a virtual game on Roll20 or something, then, you know, they can't go and say, oh, Jared is no longer allowed to play because he said something mean on Twitter once. Like, they can't do that. I just want to clarify that a lot of this goes to other businesses. But being able to control who a business supports or what a business says under very vague auspices of harm is troubling. And if I was running a business, I would be worried about Wizards screwing me over because, you know, we did a April Fool's joke that they didn't find funny.
Right. Yeah, I'm sorry for being very quiet. I'm just like, one, I'm listening, but I'm also feeling like, you know.
Well, I'm deep diving into this because I'm doing a video on the 1.2 contract. So I'm the perfect person to talk to about this right now because I'm immersed in it. And I just want to explain for people listening, you know, to try to make it as clear as possible. I don't want this to sound like some sort of rant because I'm not really ranting per se. I just want people to understand what's going on and why people are angry, you know, why the Open D&D movement started, things like that.
Mm-hmm. So, So, from your perspective, from a veteran player, what do you think would be like the most? What do you think would be like the next step for them to, like, you know, to fix all this? Like, what would you think is like the one thing that you would say is important for you so Wizards of the Coast or Hasbro to understand where your frustrations are coming from and, like, what's something they can fix this?
Well, I mean, okay, I'll make this in two parts. So from their perspective, I think the first thing they need to do is listen to the feedback that comes on this contract and modify it accordingly, like actually show the people you're listening to them that you that what they say matters, and not that you're just going to say, yeah, we'll take that under advisement and then just kind of roll with what they have or make it more draconian. On the other, on the more to the player front and less on the business front, I think they need to show that they do care about the players. They want players to have the best experience possible. And doing the whole, oh, we want this to be a safe place where no one will be, we have to hear hate speech. And I'm like, from who? Like, please show me examples. Where on D&D Beyond is there the like forum for I hate insert, you know, ethnicity? Like, you need to show me that this is a thing, this is a problem. Or stop using it as a shield and instead say, hey, we really care about our players. I want you to know that for the digital stuff, you know, the subscription will come with this, this, and this. Plus, there's a bonus item or whatever every month that subscribers will get, and it that you keep that no matter what. Like, if you end your subscription the day after you get that item is always available to your non-subscribed account. Whether that item is a new character class, a new race, city maps, or whatever, you will always have those available. Something like that. Show that you care about the players, that you're willing to give them a little bit of extra icing on their cakes. Maybe even talk about how, you know, discounts or something for being on D&D Beyond. Oh, you'll get a discount on buying our minis, or discounts on the physical books, or something along those lines that, you know, show that you have some care for your clientele. Now, I know there's a lot of people who probably want to make their voices heard, so I'm going to give some general suggestions here, and obviously I'm not the great authority on this because I don't actually work for Wizards. I would suggest giving them feedback on any of the surveys and what have you they put out is always a good idea. Also, if you have the opportunity at events or what have you, be polite, but say, hey, you know, your the prices we're hearing about and the changes to D&D Beyond bother me, or your virtual tabletop stuff seems to be kind of hurting my favorite site. Things along that, those lines. But be polite, be friendly. They're never going to listen to someone yelling at them. They're never going to listen to someone ranting and raving. You need to kind of approach them in a mature way. Alternatively, if you don't want to talk to anyone from Wizards, you could just stop buying Wizards products. And this isn't just D&D. This is Magic the Gathering. This is D&D Beyond. This is anything that has the Wizards logo, their cards, all that stuff, because they have the spell cards and what have you. And make them know that the community is not happy and the community is not going to be buying their new stuff. And when one D&D eventually comes out in 2024, you know, just stick with your 5th edition or your 3rd edition or whatever version you prefer. Or jump onto a new game, because there's plenty of other game alternatives out there.
Honestly, I think as a response to it, a Pathfinder, they decided to put everything out for free.
Well, they put one book up for free. There is a website that has essentially the entire player's guide, so you can kind of learn how to make a character. And they have a free mission as well.
So that's not bad. That's not.
Ends on the 25th, so you got to grab the free stuff when you can.
Yeah, and like I said, there's more alternatives as well. Like if that use D&D, that use 5th edition, like I mentioned earlier. If you're into Transformers or G.I. Joe, they just released a couple of games based on those, which interests me because, like, you know, obviously, if you heard this podcast for any amount of time, you know I'm a huge fan of that stuff. So it's like it'd be cool to like do something with it. And like, it's not directly Wizards of the Coast. It's like, you know, I do.
But you're supporting the third party
people. Yeah, I'm supporting,
and those are the people who will get hurt the most by this.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, and support them, like, you know, even though they're still releasing stuff, you know, support those third parties. Like I think this is Renegade Studios that's doing it. So like support them support them as much as you can with like buying their stuff. Because I think not only do they have for example, for G.I. Joe, I know for a fact they have they have like the actual guide and two like missions and a dice set. So if you just buy like the core game and buy like the dice, you know, you'd be supporting them a lot. And hey, you get a cool pair of G.I. Joe dice on top of it. And
in addition to that, I just want to bring up that for anyone wondering about Pathfinder, Paizo, the creators of the game, have said that they only for the second edition they have been putting the open GL OGL information is on there. As a courtesy, technically, second edition is differentiated enough where it no longer actually is an OGL game. It is its own game. So as soon as the new thing goes into effect, they've already said they're going to cease putting the OGL thing on any of their future products. So they're like, yeah, we were part of this. You're going to be you can behave this way. This technically isn't covered, and we're going to not put it on there anymore because we're our own thing. So if you are a Pathfinder fan, don't worry, Pathfinder will be completely safe from any of these changes.
Yeah, like, so.
And they're also making their own open gaming contract thing as well. When they get an actual full thing of that, I'll probably do a read up of that in a video on that one as well, because I think that's going to be really interesting to look at and explore, because it's supposed to be more in line with the original version, which was more very much in that idea of like open computing that we had kind of in the 90s, that idea that, you know, we should have a lot of open source stuff for computers, and they want that for games. And I know a lot of popular third party and secondary things like Chaosium, who makes Call of Cthulhu, I know is agreed to this contract. So for someone like me who would love to make his own Call of Cthulhu content, that would be a really cool business opportunity for me to make a book that would be a supplement for Call of Cthulhu under this new contract. But I need to learn more about it before I'm going to go and just do something crazy like write a full supplement book for a game.
Yeah, so, you know, like I said, there are a lot of alternatives, and like you said, like Dungeons & Dragons, well, it's like the most prominent one. It's not the be all end all. Like I said, there's Pathfinders, Call of Cthulhu. There's if you
Sword and Sorcery, 13th something or other. I can't remember the proper title of that one. In addition to all the licensed ones, like Conan and Lord of the Rings and Star Trek and Star Wars and all that.
Yeah. So you have options. There's a lot of things you can do. And like I said, it's not the end of it. Like, I do honestly believe, I have hope that Hasbro can get their shit together. Because, like,
it would be nice.
Like, the thing is, I hate that right now there's so much hate. There's this huge hate mourner going on, but it's not warranted either. That's the thing. It's like, I hate that. I'm one of those types of people that's like, I truly hate a lot of this. I hate when there's like so much vitriol going around. At the same time, too, it's not warranted either. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, I hate it, but at the same time, too, I completely understand. So
I think people are just worried, because especially if you're into some of the third-party products and how that will affect, because the original one said that the older license will be voided, and that has, at least from my reading of the current contract, is not the case. So people were afraid a lot of their old favorite games were going to end up being like dustbinned and things like that. I think that was some of the anger was there. I think there's a lot more anger about D&D Beyond changes, because obviously the third-party stuff isn't going to affect the average player. That's more on the people who like to create homebrew and things like that and third-party companies. But it is a little overblown for what it is, but Hasbro and Wizards have not taken steps to show the community they actually care about the community. And that's something they really need to do soon before they lose more players.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean that's about pretty much about it. Like, I just wanted to touch upon, like, we touched upon a lot of things. We touched upon D&D, like, you know, D&D 1. We touched upon this whole controversy with the open game license. We talked a little bit about our past with the franchise and stuff like that. You know, I would like to have you back on the future, because, like, I always say this, because, like, you know, it's always an interesting topic, but I think we should, like you know, talk about, like, some of the accelerating stuff, like the cartoon and, like, the video games and whatnot, because, like, I think those things also will be really cool to talk about in the future episode as well, concerning the Dungeons & Dragons. Because, like I said, Dungeons & Dragons is just it's more than just, like, that game at this point. It's a whole different...
No matter what happens with one D&D, the brand will still exist, because it is the Xerox or Kleenex or what have you of tabletop role-playing. You know, it's at that stage where it is the generic term almost,
yeah,
for the average person out there.
And like I said, I don't know how the new movie's gonna end up, but, you know, I hope it's gonna be good. But, you know, hey, if something happens, you know, we'll check it out as well. You know, like I said, if not, there's other alternative media that we can check out. Like I said, there's the cartoon, there's the video games, so many video games. Now, it's not just like the Capcom, Capcom was really like the Gold Box games, the games like on the NES, Eye of the Beholder.
My brother wanted me to stream those, and I'm like, I just can't go through them again. They're so archaic, it's actually difficult to go back and play.
No, I wouldn't wish that upon my worst enemies to go back and play those types of games. But regardless, we better wrap things up here because I want to keep this kind of like at like a 2-hour limit here because just because, and I think we kind of hit up all our big talking points here. But thank you so much, Jay, for popping up here and talking with us and keeping Rob's seat kind of warm here. So, do you have anything you would like to promote?
Yeah, I mean, first off, let me just say I love being here, and I would love to come back either for more D&D talk or any other kind of things. I'm a man of many franchises, so, and definitely a lot of memories of, you know, Saturday morning cartoons and of the 80s and 90s specifically. So there's a lot I have to say about a lot of subjects. But if you want to follow me, I'm Jared the Greek on Twitter, so it's pretty easy to find. I think it's all just one word. I'm not sure. You can watch my YouTube stuff, Dapper Bard Games, and watch my Twitch streams every day around 3:00 Pacific, except for, you know, Tuesday. Well, we'll see what I'll do for Tuesdays and Thursdays. But right now, Monday, Wednesday, Friday is Final Fantasy Tactics Advance with my brother, and that's Dapper Bard's Tavern. And other than that, you could probably run into me at a con running panels. I don't know what my next con is, but I'll be there.
All right.
Probably WonderCon. I'll be at WonderCon. You can find me at WonderCon. We'll play D&D. It'll be fun.
Good. He's a good DM. He's DM'd me before, and he's actually one of the coolest DMs you can have. As for me, oh boy, there's way more things I got going for myself. Of course, I got the Saints Yeah Cosmocast. We are coming back this Sunday. We are going to be recording. We're going to be recording on Sunday. We're going to be going back to the original series, and we're going to play catch up with everything that we missed between then and now, the release in Mexico of the final editions of the manga, and like just get some opinions on some of the new videos that have popped up recently, and I have found some incredible Saint Seiya. So we're gonna be discussing that. Plus, we're gonna be talking about the original series as well. I also got a new podcast which we just launched this week, it's called Sailor Moon Says. I'll leave a link on the description below where you can listen to it. It is a podcast dedicated to the world of Sailor Moon from the Deke era. So if you're into the Deke era of Sailor Moon, please give it a listen. I'll leave a link on the description to listen. But like our first episode, we just kind of went through our prehistory with the franchise and just talk a little bit about the history of like how it went from Japan to the United States and kind of like where what kind of like how it kind of like got its momentum from there. So with that said, thank you so much everybody for listening. Thank you so much Jay for coming by. I'm Ramses, and I'll see y'all next episode. Bye.